The Lock-In Podcast is brought to you by Rotocloud, the all-in-one solution for managing hospitality teams. Rotocloud lets you plan and share rotas, record attendance, and manage your team's annual leave, all in less time than it takes to make a brew. It also makes life easier for your staff, allowing them to check their rotas, request annual leave, and even pick up extra shifts, all through the Rotocloud mobile app. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotocloud.com/lock-in. Hello and welcome to the Lock-In Podcast, the show that lifts the lid on life in the pub trade by those working in it. I'm the morning advertiser's Ed Beddington, and with me as ever are my fantastic co-hosts James Cuthbertson and Heath Ball. Heath is an award-winning pub operator, having recently scooped some more silver for the mantelpiece by winning the Green King Wine Pub of the Year. So well done, Heath. I'm actually being nice to you for this time.
Thank you.
It's amazing, isn't it? Sadly, the mantelpiece is still missing the most important award, the plaque that James and I got you to commemorate the time your wife actually apologised to you.
She's got it. She's got it somewhere.
I was going to say,
I've seen it.
You haven't had the balls to put it up yourself, so you've given it to your wife.
I wouldn't do that.
This would be his last pod if he did it.
Yeah, jeez.
James has yet to experience the joy of an apology from his wife, but is an accomplished groveler himself for good reasons. He's generally always in the wrong. And just to say, James, you know, it's great to actually have you back with us in the flesh. It just wasn't the same without you last time. I mean, it was better. It just wasn't the same.
There was more food to eat.
There was.
You guys, honestly, enough already.
Yes. Anyway, thanks, guys. Thanks for joining me. So let's, for this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about getting summer ready. And no, James, we're not talking about your beach body here. But if you are going to the beach, please do let us know so we can slam the marine life rescue guys down before they get any calls.
See, that's fattest. I think you'll find I am fattest, but that is fattest. Thank you, Ed.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
That's bullying, I think, in the workplace at the moment, isn't it?
Well, I couldn't possibly comment. I'll refer you to my lawyer, joining us later.
I think you did comment, and I think actually HR will be coming to your house.
We are talking about pub gardens and outdoor spaces. We saw what a lifesaver the outside space of your pub could be during the lockdown, and there's always strong demand for a cracking pub garden in what passes for the Great British Summertime. So we'll be hearing from some great guests throughout the show to help you guys get those bushes trimmed and lawns mowed ready for the summer, including Legal Eagle James Anderson from Popstalin, who's going to be telling us what to watch out for on the legislative front. Amelia and Marcus from award-winning pub The Brizzy Bell will be sharing their advice on how to create an award-winning garden. And we'll be hearing cautionary tales from Diane Irving of Drought Limited and Georgia Nightingale of Spoken when it comes to their outside space. But before all that, however, let's catch up on the week's news. And I'm sure Heath wants to have a little bit of a rant about a certain Rishi Sunak. Over to you, Heath.
Oh, mate. I don't know what even to say. Do you know what I mean? He did so well during COVID, and now he's just gone and absolutely throwing us under the bus. They don't care. I've seen it a million times. You know, how much money does that guy have? You know, look at these. It's heartbreaking what's happening to the industry. We haven't recovered. We're on our ass again. We haven't recovered, and we're just getting hit. Here's your tax. Everything's back to normal. Okay, we've got a bit of a break on our business rates, but our business rates have always been unfair. And here we go again. We're just back in, like, it's just like everything's back to normal. We're at war, technically at war. Well, all but declaration. All the costs of everything's gone up so much. Electricity, oil, cooking oil. Someone's having it away. And here we are, and we're back to 20% VAT. What a waste of time. Like, it's just, it's all it's going to do is put more people out of business.
Yeah, I think we're
so unfair.
I think even if he'd made a concession to, or made the point that we'll look into the rating, you know, or launch a, that would give us some hope that actually that would be, because everything is tomorrow, isn't it? It's jammed tomorrow.
Yeah.
But he could have given the entire retail industry some hope. Based on, we are going to look at this and get it right. In fact, I think in Labour's response, it was mentioned that the rating system would be the overhaul.
Business rates would
be looked at. So, if he's going to start throwing things about to do later, he could have at least given us that.
But he's not even doing that.
No, that's what I mean.
We're basically really, and I've said it a million times before, we're on our own. We really are. They don't care. All our industry bodies can sit there. They don't give a stuff about us. Yeah.
I mean, Kate, I spoke to Kate Nichols last week for the review of the week, and even she said, you know, there's a deaf ear at the heart of government to our trade now, particularly on this issue, on VAT.
Surely the trade bodies then should be, you know, paid on results like the rest of us are. Because right now, what's the point? I mean, generally, if that's the case, then, as he says, you're on your own. And that's it.
We are, mate. Yeah. Like, there's no... They don't care about our industry. Honestly, our customers think we're stupid because we work in hospitality. The government thinks we're stupid because we work in hospitality.
The reality is, you're just stupid. Right?
Yeah. What's that? We're stupid? Yeah, we're stupid. We are stupid.
Not generally.
We are stupid for sitting here and taking this.
French
wouldn't. You know what I mean? We 2 years of absolute shit dealing with these stupid sausage roll things, and you can't do that and you can't do that. None of the science made sense. None of the stuff the government made sense. They're backtracking on a lot of it now, and they're turning around and going, well, you're back to 20%. It's almost like you've survived the last 2 years, but now we're really going to put it to you because we're really not going to help you at all.
And don't you think, also, Heath, that the whole petrol thing that's been in the press the last few weeks particularly has been an excuse for companies, I think your phrase was fishing for increases. So whilst everyone's talking about increases, they're, you know, just everyone, no matter if they're not impacted or not, are going for big increases, like fishing, just trying to get... We did that with the oil company, didn't we, this week? They wanted to put it up 20%. They just phoned up and said, oh, so you know, I'm trying to take a name to say, that's it done. Well, we've now... drop that company and go with someone else and save plenty.
Yeah.
So I think maybe
without a doubt, there's probably going to be some opportunistic behaviour by suppliers, isn't there?
Yeah, it definitely is.
And that's where it comes down to relationships, though, doesn't it? You know, having strong, solid relationships with your suppliers, so they're less likely to try and pull.
I mean, you know, most are suffering, but even if you share the burden, it can't all come down to the retailer or the licensee. It can't. I mean, it's just, you know, unless we're buying from them, they're not going to have a business either. No. So I think there needs to be some reality there in these conversations. But yeah, it does feel, on Heath's point, it does feel that no one cares. And
they don't. I mean, ultimately, though, we're in a situation where, you know, it's within our gift now. We've got to get on with it. We've got to do it. You know, we survived 2 years of absolute horror, closures, restrictions, everything like that. We managed to get through that. You know, at least now we're open and we're trading, you know?
That's different. That's different. Do you know what I mean? We've taken on debt. We've all taken on debt. We're all a bit battle-worn. Mm. We're all a bit exhausted. Mm. And then we get told, you know, we're not even going to give you a chance to fully recover. Because no matter what they fucking say, this government say, we still are dealing with COVID. You said it before. You got some people dropping out of the public in because they've got COVID. Why are they staying at home? If the government guidance says you don't have to stay at home anymore, everyone's taking a moral obligation upon themselves to go, you know what, I won't see my friends. So you're still getting the backlash of that. We're not out of this. Mm. No matter what we think about COVID, we're not out of it. And people's habits have changed and going out's changed. We haven't recovered. We've got debt. We've still got rising costs, all this shit. And the government's not even given a chance for us to catch our breath and go, you know what, guys, take some time. You know, get back on your feet, and then hopefully we'll have a bit of stronger hospitality sector, because they don't care. And if more businesses go out of business, that's it. They don't. And that wanker Gordon Ramsay coming out with his statement last week.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Remind us of the statement for those that didn't hear it.
Well, he said it got rid of all the crap out of the industry, mate. Sacked. How many staff did he sack when he came in? Because he did. He did, and you can fact check that. He went through to one of his restaurants, a lot of his restaurants, and got rid of people when COVID hit. Yeah. He cut, you know, and there he is playing the, he can piss off.
Yeah, but he's also made friends with most of Cornwall as well by saying he hates Cornish people, despite having three houses there. So,
did he say that?
He's on the charm offensive, I think, on that front.
But I'm still loving that interview he did with Rishi Sunak. Mm. Just shows you, doesn't it? You know, 2 millionaires having a chat about how to save the hospitality sector.
My favourite thing of Rishi Sunak was him trying to pay for his petrol in his car by trying to scan his bank card.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't his car and wasn't his petrol.
It wasn't his car, was it? Yeah, exactly. Has he ever paid for anything in his life? I think the best headline I saw was something, one of the spoof sites, something about Rishi Sunak trying to pay with a Fabergé egg and diamonds, which...
The whole thing's just, we're basically run by a bunch of charlatans who are just self-interested. They don't care about us. It's just about what gets them.
So before we go, Heath, what are you going to do? VAT back up to 20%. How are you going to deal with it?
mate, how, like, the problem is, you, how do you, customers think that you're having it away all the time anyway, because they walk into your place and they go, oh, you're busy, but they don't see the costs, so they're sitting there. So you put things up, say you put things up 10, 15% to cover rising cost and VAT. They just think they're taking the piss. So you've got to try and, you either take a hit on your bottom line yourself, which you don't bloody have, because it's been decimated by COVID, or you put it up and then you have to listen to them bitch how expensive it is. I don't know. There's going to be tweaking. You know what I mean? It'll just carry on tweaking prices. There's nothing else you can do. You've got to, like, if they don't want to come, then go somewhere else.
So you're not going to wholesale put prices up. You're going to tweak and nudge.
Yeah, I'm going to tweak and nudge all the way through. I'm not just going to do a blanket across the board, because it could look, you know what I mean? I don't know.
Because certainly your multi-millionaire customers up in Highgate are price sensitive.
Mate, they are. They are. They're the worst type. They are the worst type. The people with the most money are the people who complain the most about pricing. It's true. They'll sit here and complain, and they'll get picked up by their driver in a Bentley to go home. Do you know what I mean? Like, give me a break.
Do they pay with Fabergé eggs and diamonds as well? And on
my wish.
Note, let's park that one there before his head actually does explode, because I'm slightly worried there seems to be steam coming out of his ear. So let's leave it there. You're listening to the Lock-In Podcast, and we're talking pub gardens. The pub garden is an iconic part of the Great British Pub Institution, and the summer months will see punters flocking, if the weather plays ball. But how do you create the kind of space that will have said punters flocking? We're delighted to be joined by Amelia Nicholson and Marcus Seaman of the Brisley Bell in Norfolk to find out exactly what makes a great garden. So welcome, guys.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
Good to have you and the dog with us. So, I mean, you took the title of Best Pub Garden in the Great British Pub Awards last year, and then went on to win the overall Pub of the Year as well, because you were greedy. So it's not just about the garden with you. And I guess that's a fairly valid point, isn't it? A great garden won't work unless you get the other bits right, I suppose. Or can a great pub garden stand alone in a mediocre site? What do we think?
Well, this is our first and last pub, so we've got nothing to compare it to. But I would imagine if you're a drinking pub and you've got a really nice garden, I think that would probably work. Especially if the sun's out and it's a nice green space, a nice space to hang out in. And on the flip of that, if you're food only and you had a nice garden, I think that would work too. So yeah, I think a garden in every form of a pub would probably enhance it on a sunny day.
I mean, Heath, you're a good example. You've got gardens and a terrible pub. So, I mean, do you think they can stand alone, or do you need to get it all right to make it work?
But I think a lot of pubs get away with a multitude of sins over summer, who are just average operators but with great spaces, and they don't have to try hard. It's like having a pub in the West End. You're always sort of going to be busy pre-COVID. So I think a lot of people do get away with having a mediocre offer and not having to do much about it.
So a pretty great outdoor space is an absolute bonus, even if your pub's a bit rubbish, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
So, I mean, not talking rubbish gardens or rubbish pubs, because clearly Amelia and Marcus, you've got both. You've hit the ground running with both those, ticked both boxes. So tell us a bit about the garden. Tell us a bit about your journey. How did you create, the best garden in the country? Nice, easy question.
Nice, easy question, in which I'll give a very short answer. But basically, we had a blank canvas to a degree, with nearly 2 acres of garden, and Marcus did spend about 3 months on a digger. So I think with a blank canvas, you actually have a lot more scope.
Yes, yeah. So tell us about that digger experience, Marcus.
I quite like it. Amelia's right. We're lucky we've got a bit of space. With that digger, we were able to sort of create really interesting areas. So it's gone from a sheep paddock to croquet lawns and raised area and beautiful beds and lots of trees and Yeah, we put an awful lot of work into it. It's something that we're very proud of, and it's definitely a draw to come to the Grizzly Bell, especially when the weather's nice.
And I mean, it sounds like you spent quite a bit on that. Was it an expensive investment?
Yeah, it was.
Trees are the expensive bit.
Yeah, I'd hate to add it all up, but I can see we've got a part-time gardener and he's cutting the edges at the moment out through the window. So yeah, there's a huge investment you have to make, but our experience is that it pays dividends. It really does pay for itself tenfold. And you know, in our we're sitting in our garden room at the moment with massive windows that overlooks. You can't have a bad garden and a nice dining experience with the architecture that we have. It just wouldn't work. Something we're very proud of.
On top of which, we've got the patio and the shed just outside, so you know, lots of space to eat, which I think is super popular.
And, did you guys have any experience of sort of landscaping or garden? I mean, how did you do? Is it something that you were good at anyway, or did you get people in to help with that?
No, not at all. We didn't get anybody to help. We spent a lot of time scratching our heads. We did a lot of planning two-dimensionally, and then the both of us, and then it was just a question of pegging it all out and hiring a digger, and away we went. You weren't green-fingered at all, were you? I've got a farming background, so I know how to grow things. But we've just learnt on the hoof, and I'm still learning every day. Google on my phone is brilliant.
Got many an operator out of trouble, that one. You've invested in the garden. Where did you look for inspiration then? Where did you nick ideas from other pubs, or was it just sort of your own creation?
Yeah, you know, I'd say we didn't. Pinterest is a great place to nick ideas from in terms of. But when I say nick ideas, I think it's more about sort of finding an idea and making it your own and building on it. Mm. Am I wobbling the table? I can't remember the question. Sorry, you're off to now.
Looking for ideas. Where do you get ideas from?
What we did was we had some existing trees and bushes, and so we really designed the architecture, designed the garden around the existing architecture of what was here. Certainly, we had one or two ideas that we've inputted from other gardens, not necessarily pubs, but on the whole, it was just working with what we had.
And I mean, you touched on maintenance there as well. You've got a part-time gardener. That is something, I guess, that needs to be thought about, isn't it? I mean, there's the ongoing cost of maintaining. You can create something amazing, but you've got to stay on top of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Although we are, he's a retired Met police officer. Our retired Met police officer, he is a gardener for a day and a half a week, but he also doubles up as a very handy handyman. And it's quite a big building, so if he hasn't got a fork or a spade in his hand, he's got a screwdriver or a paintbrush. So if you can combine the both with that one individual, it works in the field.
I was going to say, and also security as well.
Just going to ask, it's James here, just going to ask about obviously the weather in this country is a challenge. What have you done to sort of ensure that the space is usable sort of as much throughout the year as possible?
Well, we've got, that's a good question, James. We've got an outside.
It's the first time for everything,
area,
James. Sorry, Karen.
Which seats about 24 people, 26 people. We were able to get a grant from the government to put a canvas over that during COVID. And that was 100% grant. So we've done that. We've also, we had a beech tree just as you enter the garden. A beech hedge. We decided in lockdown two, I think, to move that to create a couple of holes or archways in that hedgerow and create a shed area for two seating areas, which is heated and has got lighting, and it provides shelter when the weather's not so great. So there's various things that we can do. I'd like to do more, but where do you draw the line?
Absolutely. And Heath, I mean, you've discussed maintenance on your side. I know I've seen you running around with a chainsaw in your pub, trying to trim the bushes. You just do it yourself, do you?
I do it all myself. Oh, Mark, I say that. I've got Marcus, who runs my other pub. He comes up. He's quite handy. So between the two of us, but it doesn't, an hour a morning of just plotting around doing stuff. I don't have 2 acres. So, 2 acres in London would be a dream. But no, I don't have the luxury. I do have a question. How do you keep up with the demand? Like, is your kitchen massive? How do you keep up with the sheer amount of covers you can obviously do?
This is a brand new, the kitchen is 5 years old.
Oh, okay.
When we did the redevelopments of the pub, it was, we bought a sort of two up, two down country inn and then expanded quite dramatically. So that included the new kitchen. So as soon as we did that, the chef, our French chef turned around and said, I did not sign up for this. And because we were so busy, and within 2 weeks we realised our brand new kitchen wasn't big enough.
And it's fair size. It is a fair size.
It's a good question. They manage the space that they have really well. We've had to build on extensions with regard to additional refrigerator space and storage space, but it is what it is at the moment. The plan before lockdown was to build a proper extension onto the kitchen, but obviously COVID put the brakes on that.
I mean, in terms of covers then, how many covers outside do you have in your garden?
So we can see on the patio and in the shed that we built, we can see 42 extra covers. And then we can also seat people, and that's not in the actual garden itself, but... depending how busy the restaurant is, we usually just serve food on the patio and in the shed. But
so yeah, you don't serve food out into the garden proper. Then it's kept. That's how you manage that process, isn't it?
That's how we manage it. And if it's if people can have a bowl of chips or something out there, and if it's a quiet day, we will be able to do it. But just in terms of actually being able to have it all contained, because the patio is open to the garden.
Yeah.
We made a decision that it was too far for the food to be run, and so there was a chance that the food would arrive cold, or not as warm as we'd want it to be, because it is 2 acres, so it's quite a big garden. So that's where we've sort of drawn a line around where you can and can't.
Just need golf buggies, Marcus, surely, no?
Well, I was going to say, in COVID times when we were serving food out into the garden only because obviously no one was allowed inside, some of the staff counted their steps, which was very funny. We had a kind of competition and we kind of worked out what made us easier. But our garden is, it's a lovely sizable garden.
Fantastic. I'm just conscious of time, so we're almost out of time. But one last thing. I mean, what advice would you give to other operators that are looking to create something special in their garden?
I would say it doesn't matter how big or small your space is. Plant greenery. People love being surrounded by green. So just invest in trees and bushes and plants. And keep it as well manicured as you possibly can, and people will use it, and people will come back again.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Okay, guys. Well, thank you very much for that.
No problem at all.
You're very welcome.
This is the Lock In Podcast with myself, Ed Bennington, Heath Ball and James Cuthbertson. We're talking about outdoor spaces and getting ready for the summer weather, and we've seen some serious changes to legislation and planning in the last couple of years. So to bring us up to speed and keep us on our toes, we've got one of the finest legal minds in the industry joining us now, James Anderson of Poppleston Allen. Did I get that bit right, James? We agree the tenant, right?
Get his name right. your introductions are far too generous. I thought you were talking about someone else.
It's fine. As long as the check's in the post, yeah. That's all we need to worry about. So anyway, welcome, James. Thanks for joining us. Let's kick off with a bit of an update. You know, what sort of changes have we seen in planning and licensing rules over the last couple of years? And what remains in place that people can take advantage of?
Yes, two principally, Ed. Firstly, planning. There has been a relaxation of the requirement for temporary structures. So if you want to put a marquee in your garden, your pub garden, you can do so as long as it's temporary, 10 metres in height or less.
Right.
Then you can do so without planning permission, which is, you know, very useful. Perhaps, ironically, less useful in the summer when everyone wants the sun, but it certainly would be effective now and when it's not so warm in, you know, making use of the garden more popular. And that's a trend that, you know, I've seen over probably 5 to 10 years. The rise of the pub garden as an alternative space and its use outside the summer has been a dramatic change, I think. That's the first one. Secondly, the government introduced the Business and Planning Act 2020, which essentially to encourage easier use of the highway for tables and chairs, which again has been successful, perhaps less relevant to pubs, more some pubs on the high street, but more really a high street thing. But also at the same time, that enabled pubs without off sales to take advantage of off sales. And there are, I think, a reasonably significant number of pubs that only have on sales. So the Business and Planning Act allowed them automatically, without any application, to have off sales until 11 o'clock. That had several benefits. One, delivery, which became particularly popular during the various lockdowns, and takeaway as well. But also to use external areas, if they weren't on the licensing plan, then they could use those areas by way of off sale.
Those all
remain in place, but the latter piece of legislation, the Business and Planning Act, will come to an end on the 30th of September this year, unless further extended.
And I mean, do you get any sense that there's going to be an extension to that, or is it just impossible to know at the moment?
We don't know. I think there is likely to be some change in relation to tables and chairs that may be local authority driven, because some local authorities, and again, really high street again, some local authorities, I mean, Westminster, for example, really embraced this. Areas of Soho, you may have seen, were effectively closed off. There were a lot of road closures in a bid to help the trade. And Kensington and Chelsea, interestingly, who were notoriously quite hard in relation to tables and chairs, obviously highly residential and lots of posh residents, but they are going to introduce a scheme to extend tables and chairs throughout the Royal Borough. And that's acting independently of Parliament. They're just doing that. They had a survey, and the survey found there was a majority in favour of continued and extra tables and chair use across the boroughs. So that may happen. In terms of government legislation, possibly the pavement licences, it's always been a source of frustration to me that in many London local authorities, if I want to put tables and chairs on the pavement prior to the Business and Planning Act, I need both planning permission and a highways licence. I need two licences effectively doing the same thing. Much delay, double the cost. They're both renewable annually or usually at some cost. So it's actually quite anti-business. The off sales, I suspect, which was really driven by takeaway delivery to help pubs who couldn't do that, I suspect will not be extended, because pubs can, of course, apply to add off sales to their licences. So I think that will be a limited COVID assistance measure.
And Heath, James, are you... you've got the off-sales permission anyway, or will you take advantage of that, those changes?
We had it already.
Yeah.
We had that already, yeah.
So, James, You said about the height of the marquees. Yeah. I think our local guy said it was 3 meters.
Right. I'm sorry. I said 10.
Yeah, it's okay. I just wanted to check.
I was going to say, is that a multi-story marquee? Or,
yeah, no. I was just about to try and get a refund for the planning cost.
Yeah. Good spot. You should have got the other guy on.
he was busy.
He was on holiday. Yeah.
And so was the other one. And the other one.
I've been listening too much to Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Yeah,
I was getting my meters mixed up with my feet.
Or Diane Abbott.
It's 10 feet. It's 3 meters, 10 feet. Feet. 3 meters, 10 feet.
Sorry, I just thought I'd check. That was all.
And that's height.
Yeah, thank you.
Height. Is there any restriction, sort of width, length? Is it just height?
I'm not sure. I think as long as it's in your boundary. Is that right, James?
It's 50 meters square or half of the size of the building, whichever is less, I believe, is right. The limit. And you can't be less than 2 meters from the neighbouring curtilage. So you'd have to move it back a bit from the back of the garden if you had a neighbour the other side. So it's pretty generous. And I was going past a pub actually in Kingston the other day, and they've got one of these marvelous stretch tents, which is quite a clever design because it's not a marquee and it's not a tarpaulin. It's sort of like a mixture, and it covered virtually the whole of the outside area.
And I mean, you said it's probably not that practical as we're coming up to warmer months, but you have actually seen the British summer, right?
Yes, indeed. And so they probably will.
It's all about having that multi-use space, I guess, isn't it? I mean, are you planning on keeping your marquees up? Or,
very much.
Yeah.
Even in the summer?
Yeah.
I think last year, we've got clear roofs on ours, and I think last year was a prime example. It rained loads over summer. So we take the sides off, we leave the roof on, and at least if it rains, we can still book all the tables outside. Before, we'd never take bookings for the garden because you never knew what was going to happen. But now we go, at least if it rains, we're still okay. So, yeah, definitely. I think it's been a godsend, the marquee.
Yeah.
Really, really helped. Your extra revenue really has helped.
And there are still people that want to sit outside, and they are still people that are worried about the COVID thing that do request it.
Mate, I'm just here trying to do the best to pay as much tax as I possibly can to get this government back on its feet. Just bring VAT back to 20%. I'm here. I want to support this country.
Heath Ball, MBE.
There we go. He's selfless.
Sarcasm selfless. In case you missed it.
We couldn't tell with that Kiwi accent, mate. It's impossible. You sound sarcastic when you speak generally. Coming back to actually getting James the legal expert, while we've got him, let's talk about. So what do operators need to think about if they're thinking about maybe having an outside bar during the summer months? What are some of the issues there?
Well, they're not as controversial as they used to be. And I think we've talked about it before. There is quite a lot of misconception about outside spaces. I mean, you don't need the outside area to be licensed to use it. If you've got off sales, you can, as long as you've got permission to use the space, and if it's your space, you can use it. And during lockdown, we saw a lot of operators being imaginative, gardens, extending their own gardens, car parks. I saw a number of pubs with tables and chairs across the car park, terracing, decking and that sort of thing. So you can use those as long as you have off sales without any restriction, without doing anything, which is helpful. If you want to put a bar outside, though, you are selling alcohol from the bar. So that has to be in an area that's licensed. Many pubs on the plan, the outside area or part of it is licensed. And again, we would say if you're sticking a temporary bar there, you don't need to do anything. It's a temporary structure. The fact that it sells alcohol is not relevant because it's in an area that is licensed to sell alcohol. If you want to put a bar out and you don't have that part of the premises licensed, then you do need to apply for what's likely to be a full variation. And you can do one of two things. You can either just license the bar, so effectively, rather crudely, sticking a red brick on the plan where the bar will be. You could only put the bar there. If you wanted to move the bar around, you could then license the whole of the area, for example. But that can be more controversial. If you've got residents and they see the garden being licensed, then there may be more concern. It brings into play other licensable activities as well, of course, because it would then apply the Live Music Act automatically. And so you would be able to have live music outside till 11 o'clock, which may not cause may cause some concern. So we would probably advise, if you're just going to stick your bar in one area, just put the bar on the plan for variation, sort of path of least resistance. But if you want to move your bar around, or you want entertainment outside, some pubs, for example, in more rural areas, like, you know, why not? You know, fetes and functions and plays and things, they happen, and then license the whole area.
So unfortunately that means Heath's wine chalet isn't actually illegal then.
I mean, it sounds good. No,
I think he also took advice from Pompous Island.
I mean, I thought we broke all the rules in those things, but I'm disappointed there.
Sorry, Ed, if I may, this. I mean, bars outside cause less problems. I mean, I remember doing an application years ago, and the residents were up in arms because their perception is that you're putting a bar outside, that in some way you're going to change the behaviour of the residents and turn it into some sort of rowdy thing. Yeah. It's just a point of sale. Yeah. And effectively, it, practically speaking, operators like them because people don't have to go back into the pub. Yeah. So it's much more efficient in terms of, you know, giving customers a good time. It aids supervision, we would say, because of course you've got, it's permanently manned.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it I think it drives sales for a lot of pubs, because you can get a, you know, if you're walking past a pub garden, you see a bar and you think, well, you know, I don't even have to go inside, I'll just get a seat and off we go.
Nice and easy.
So they are becoming more popular.
Absolutely. So, like I said, conscious of the time, so one last thing. What should licensees be doing now in terms of licensing to get ready for the summer months? We've got the Jubilee coming up. What do they need to be thinking about?
Well, I think it's looking at the license, Ed. I mean, most now will be you know, fully familiar with it. You know, I think, do I need a bar is a good one. Mm. I think a bar can be a sort of game changer. Do I want to put any food outside? You know, barbecues are very popular. Don't need anything as long as you're not selling after 11 o'clock for a barbecue. It's temporary. Just stick a barbecue outside. I think always, if you're having some sort of event with entertainment, am I licensed outside for entertainment? Will the Live Music Act apply? Do I need a temporary event notice? Do I need to tell my neighbours? Which is probably a good idea, frankly. And tell the neighbours you're having a bit of a function, they're more than welcome, etc., etc. But I think, you know, those are the things. There's no sort of magic bullet to operating outside. I think supervision, forgive me, you know, I don't want to tell operators to suck eggs, but it can go wrong outside quite quickly if you get the wrong group, and, you know, they turn up a bit pissed, and they're a bit rowdy. But that's, you know, that's a supervision and management control issue.
Absolutely.
I guess with that, there's the underage piece as well, isn't there? Making sure that
it's
not being passed.
Yeah, of course. I suppose it's harder. You've got a table outside. You mean to enforce it? You know, dad goes up to the bar and, you know, he gets the tables around the back of the bar. It's not waiter-waitress service, and he's getting a couple of sneaky ones in for his, you know, 15, 16-year-olds. It's not impossible. It's quite difficult to enforce.
I've just got one question, because I know someone who sent their 9-year-old child to the bar to buy a drink recently.
James?
No, I think that was you, Edward, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. Yes, it was, Ed. Yes.
No. I don't.
He looks very old for his age, though.
He's got the moustache.
One complains too much, I think.
No. I didn't actually send him to the bar. I complained that I couldn't send him to the bar. That was my disappointment, because I was nice and comfortable, sat in the sunshine, and it would have been great just to send him off to get the drinks in, but obviously that's frowned upon.
Yeah, well, were you drinking alcohol, Ed?
I couldn't possibly comment. but yes.
He could have got you an orange juice.
He could have got me an orange juice. That is true. I shouldn't have sent him for that. But yeah, no, I was after a beer. But there we go.
It is a bit ridiculous. I used to go, my dad used to send me in the old days when things were a bit more relaxed, and my local landlord used to serve me.
Bring back the good old days when kids could get served. Yeah. Pops, yeah. Like, that's the Bobson Allen view on
what's happened to us all.
Brilliant. All right, James. Well, thank you very much for that. We shall leave you to crack on with your day.
But cheers, James.
Cheers.
Take
okay.
Care.
Yeah,
cheers, James. See you, gents. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we're talking about getting ready for summer. And no, that's not James and his tips on manscaping for modern beach attire. We're looking at pub gardens and outdoor space. I think that's the fifth time I've made that joke, isn't it?
Doesn't get any better.
It doesn't. I know.
It's so shit.
Great. We've heard from Amelia and Marcus on how to create a great garden, and James has updated us on what we need to know. I'm delighted to have a previous podcast guest joining us now. Clearly, Heath, you didn't put her off last time, after all. It's Diane Irving of Drought Limited, so welcome, Diane.
Hello, nice to be here.
And we've also got George Nightingale of Spoken in Exmouth on the line as well. So thanks, George, for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
So, I mean, what we want to do here, because we've been talking about sort of outdoor space, getting ready for summer, setting up your business so that it's ready, but it's not that straightforward. There are challenges, and we've heard from James from Popson and Allen earlier on some of the legal elements of that. But I know, Diane, you've had some issues, and George, you've also in the middle of a bit of a battle as well. So, look, let's just have a chat about what you're experiencing and what some of the what some of those issues are. So, I mean, Diane, let's maybe start with you. I mean, you had, I believe it's at the Crown, isn't it? You've got an outside
Crown,
terrace.
Yeah.
So tell us your experience. What happened?
Okay, so like many operators, last summer decided that we would make use of some space at the front. The Crown is, you know, on a main road, and it was a space we hadn't really looked at before, to be honest, because of the fact it was on a sort of corner site on quite a busy road. But looking at the way things were going and the desire for people to be outside, we decided that we would develop the front area. We have a pavement at the front that belongs to us, a pavement area leading onto the pavement. So a sizable piece of land, maybe about 10 foot wide maybe before we get to the pavement. The problem with it has always been, because it's in a corner site in a main road, if we put furniture out, it had to be something that we either take in at night or that we can leave out permanently. We couldn't bring it in at night because, to be honest, we haven't got any storage space to keep it. So it was a case of that was one of the reasons we'd never done anything. But I thought it was too good an opportunity to miss. So we looked into furniture that we could leave out. We got some of these gabion baskets that we filled with rocks. So the furniture is non-permanent. It's not attached to the ground. It's not screwed into anything, but it's pretty... it's not going anywhere fast, definitely. So we thought we're quite clever. We checked with Carlisle City Council, our wonderful local council, beforehand. We checked with planning, we checked with licensing, we did all of this. We put it up. We had a little bit of hassle with them at the time. We had a few neighbours didn't quite like it, as you can expect. But it was nice, very pretty, good job at the end. All seemed well and good, settled down, was getting used quite well. Kind of patting ourselves on the back, thinking we'd done a good job there. And lo and behold, we get a letter from the valuations office who say that our patio has been finished, therefore our business rates are going up by 17%.
Ouch.
That kind of, when you add that in, that means that all the money we spent and anything we potentially have made has been wiped out straight away. We challenged that. We went on to Carlisle City Council and said, hang on, wait a minute, we haven't built anything, we haven't constructed anything, we haven't changed the fabric of the building in any way. We've put some furniture out at the front. pretty much like a pavement license for anyone else. This has been encouraged by the government. You know, this is supposed to help pubs. Why are we being, you know, why are we being singled out like this? They said, oh, it's kind of a mistake. We're not sure. We probably didn't get it right, but it's now with the VOA, so you have to deal with them. Dealing with them is obviously a joy. Took us about 8 weeks of toing and froing, sending documentation to prove who we were and claim our building. And the only solution that they will give now to look at this is that if we want to challenge the increase, then we have to go through a complete re-evaluation. Now, do you go for the re-evaluation and hope that it comes in at the same as it was, or
but it really stuffed, yeah.
It depends when you were last re-evaluated as well, isn't it? Because you've taken that business on and turned it around and built it up.
Yeah.
Have you been valued since then?
No.
Oh dear.
So when we took it on 5 years ago, it was pretty much a derelict site. There was hardly anyone in there. They were looking at selling it off for flats and things. We took it on as the last minute, turned it around. We won best turnaround pub at the Great British Pub Awards with it in the first year after we opened. So yeah, really turned it around. So do we want to reevaluate it? No. So we're stuck with a 17% increase in our business rates because we've put some furniture out the front.
That's insane, isn't it? George, I mean, tell us about your experience. What's your situation?
So similar, but slightly different in as much as I've got a spirits bar and restaurant that has no private land. We go directly out to county land. So we have a space operated by Devon County Council, and that's the pavement license, and they charge us £100 per year. Fantastic, no problems with that whatsoever. Again, it has to be removed every night, which we do. Bit of a pain, but it's a bit of a strange circumstance in Exmouth. East Devon District Council own a bit of land immediately adjacent to that, and it's all pedestrianised, a nice little bit of grass area. During the COVID pandemic, we were foolish enough to believe that this was public land, and we put a table out on there for people to sit outside and stay safe. East Devon District Council took it upon themselves to fine us £500, and that actually came to national attention because of the ludicrousness of the situation. But what that did do is it started other businesses in the square. So think of it as a big piazza area in the town centre. All the other businesses then opened up their spaces, and East Devon, in fairness, then allowed us to use the land at £100 per year. Hugely successful for both the businesses, for the whole town, the visitors to the town, the local businesses. Everybody is totally in favour, and we felt it would be carrying on ad infinitum. Nothing negative about it whatsoever. If anything, it was all positive, because we all have street drinkers in our towns, and because we were filling the place with nice people, they moved out, and it was just generally a better venue. This year, East Devon District Council have decided to increase the rates. However, they've increased it by 144 times. Pro rata, my annual rent for a patch of grass now outside the premises, they have valued at £14,400 per year. Now, that in itself is ludicrous. However, East Devon don't have enough staff to make these decisions. We met with councillors and officers in the autumn of last year to get this all resolved. They've subbed it out to a private company called Torbay Development Agency, who, well, if you just do a search on them, you'll see how scandalous it is. They've come back and valued it at £14,400, adjacent to a bit of county land valued at £100.
So
there's no transparency.
You're expected to pay £14,000 to use that.
No, £6,000, just for a couple of months in the summer.
I mean, where are you at with that? I mean, are they just refusing to back down on it?
Well, East Devon District Council believe they've been clever by...
I think we've lost George.
Themselves saying, and they do not want... Hello?
Hello. Sorry, George, we lost you then.
We're not even allowed to approach them now. We've got to go to Torbay Development Agency, and we cannot get an answer from them. They will not discuss anything, and they will not even justify why we are all being charged different rates.
So just to summarise, George, if you use the land, you pay. If you don't use the land, you don't pay.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, effectively, it puts you in a position of you just don't use that land, I guess.
It does. But what's even worse is that they are threatening us that if we do not pay that money, they will put it out to open market and put it out to somebody else. Well, what that implies is that it is marketable land. But as we all know with these pavement licenses and leases, is that they only allow tables and chairs to be put on this bit of land. And so who is going to be paying this sort of money? We are the natural users of the land, and it is an extension of a highway and premises license. Mm. It's opportunism and profiteering from a council who should be supporting us at a time that electric is more than doubling, minimum wage is going up, rent increases and rate increases are kicking in. And it's not as if there's an opportunity cost to any of this, because for 11 years of the development, it's never been used. So. Every which way you look at it, it is wholly inappropriate, and we have no redress.
Yeah, no, I feel for you, George, I feel for you. Let's see if we can put some pressure on and get some redress for you in that. But Diane, I mean, you're knackered, really, aren't you? You can't do anything about it.
We're to put it into similar context, we're paying about 7,000, I think, off the top of my head, about £7,000 now a year more for a piece of land that belongs to us and was there, and we've just put some furniture on it. At a time when, you know, pubs are supposed to be being supported, the whole point of pavement licenses and everything else was to encourage people. You know, we've done everything we were supposed to, you know, we've gone with that and tried to use it, and we've had it now.
Yeah.
But absolutely, there's no redress. And any investment that we had and any profit we've had coming back from that has gone. In fact, we'll be out of pocket.
Sorry, George, go on.
And the really interesting point to make in all of this, is that the people who make these decisions, they look at our outside space and go, oh, isn't that lucrative? And this is a point that someone said to me, oh, how lucrative that is. Well, if they go inside of the premises and see that there's no customers, it's only a displacement from inside to outside.
Yeah.
So we're not really taking any more. And it's the public that want this service. Of course, we want the capacity as well, but it is like for like. So we're not really taking that much more money, yet we're being penalised and taxed for it. And it's wholly wrong.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I think, you know, our planning officer who came to look at it at the end of the, you know, the development, came to look, and he said, what you've actually done is transformed what was, to be honest, a pretty bleak corner that had nothing going for it into a really attractive space. Mm. So we've enhanced the area and then paying through the nose for it, for the privilege of enhancing the area. That's all it is.
Story of the pub trade, really, isn't it? You're penalised for success. This is the thing.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, yeah, conscious of time, I think just to summarise there, I think for anyone that's looking to develop outside space, then think about it, get advice, make sure that you're not going to end up getting caught in any kind of trap as you two have experienced it. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. All right, guys, well, thank you very much for that. That's all we've got time for, but thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Ciao. Thank you for your time. Bye.
This is the Lock-In Podcast, and we're looking towards the summer and outdoor spaces in this episode. With the warmer weather upon us, what should we be thinking about serving? And I guess this is both food and drink. So guys, let's talk summer drinking, beer garden bevies, beer garden food. What should people be thinking about? What are you thinking about, Heath, when it comes to... let's start with drinks.
Oh, I think fun. I think after the last 2 years, you want to have something fun. Like we championed the frozen margaritas during lockdown when we're trying to think of things to make money, and it's become incredibly successful, especially takeaway frozen margaritas, people going for walks around Highgate, going to Hampstead Heath. So yeah, the frozen margarita machine stayed all over winter. You know, obviously the sales weren't that great in winter, but in summer as the weather changes, if I was another operator and I had a big beer garden, I'd be putting a frozen margarita machine in. I think this, and doing them takeaway as well, I think there's so much opportunity there. Even frozen rosé, which is I've seen become popular over the last couple of years. Okay. Like anything fun, like, you know, like just giving people a bit of a childhood memory, but getting them hammered at the same time in a responsible sort of way.
I was going to say, served in a drink responsibly, all the rest of it. I mean, you've got the margarita machine down at Lockhart as well. I mean, has that been
Works great.
A hit as well?
Yeah, because it's kind of a catch-all cocktail, really. You know, it gives you another element to it. We got a great recipe that we use it with Cask Marketing, the business that supplies a lot of our spirits. And yeah, it's stunning. Once people have one, it tends to be, you know, it's almost like walking through somewhere with fresh bread. Someone sees it and it's like, oh yeah, I'll have one of those. And it becomes, contagious throughout the site. So yeah, really good. Really good.
It's an adult slushy, basically.
Yeah. We do get, in the summer though, you get people come around on a dog walk. Right. They'll come in, they'll get a couple and take it, you know, because it's quite punchy. And it's a really good, it was heated, you know, a really nice extra line of business. It's great.
I think the event we were at where you won your award the other day, Heath, actually, they had a slushy machine going, didn't they? I think it was, they were doing frozen ciders or?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was tucked away in the corner. I mean, you were too busy sort of celebrating your win and knocking back the Prosecco, so.
You've never seen me drink Prosecco.
It was really cheap Prosecco as well. I needed to get a picture of you drinking it because...
You wish. Yeah. I think, you know, we've seen how cocktails are becoming more mainstream in pubs, you know. Some of them done badly, but you're seeing people, you know, the consumers want that sort of thing. So I think, you know, this summer, I'd definitely be, you know, our frozen margarita machine is iconic here now, and same at the Lockhart. But I think it's a great way to go. I think I'd just be looking at fun things, you know, that you can do.
But people did a lot of that sort of mixology at home, didn't they, in lockdown? So I think it has. We talked about the gin market dropping off, but I think we've seen that premium spirit thing where people got adventurous lockdown. And it's opened their eyes a bit. So definitely a world of difference. It gives them a bit of holiday as well. You know, if they're not going away, there's a feeling of, you know, kind of a little bit of indulgence.
It's fun, isn't it? I mean, a frozen rosé though, Heath, does that not sound just wrong as a wine man?
Mate, let's be honest. You know, rosé's, you know, it's not an intellectual wine drink, is it really? I think it's a bit of fun. It's something personally I wouldn't sit back and knock back, but you know, it's popular.
And obviously food then as well. You know, we've got beer gardens. We talked about a little bit. We touched on this with Amelia and Marcus earlier, on serving food in gardens. You know, there's logistical challenges there. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I'd be doing quick stuff. We do that at the Red Line, because we pick up another, you know, we're lucky this year we've had the marquee over the front garden, so we've had use all year round. But once we pick up the back garden as well, that's potentially another 100 covers a day. So, you know, we reduce our menu, we bring our menu down and we make it quick, you know, stuff that's really, like, you know, really quick to cook and get out really fast. And we change the dynamics in the kitchen a bit, more grilled stuff. And I just reducing the menu. But, you know, things like burgers, you guys did that study on how many burgers are sold in pubs, what percentage of sales it is. You know, you can't, I just think, you know, people, I think you don't have to be too clever in summer. If you've got big beer gardens, I think you're going to be busy regardless. So, you know, just make your offering, you know, tailored to what you can do and make it quick. More covers you do, the more flipping you're doing, more money you make.
Yeah, and I think we've probably seen the death of the kind of sharing board that everyone just seemed to be the quick fix for.
Let's be honest, James. Let's be honest. It's never a sharing board when I'm with you and Ed.
That's a great shout. You're right.
It's a fair point. We have to fight him off.
Let's not have this conversation about do you share curries or Chinese again. Gee. Oh my goodness.
Chinese, yes, curry, no. We've established this. Yeah, these are the rules.
Heath's just wrong.
Yeah, Heath is entirely in the wrong on this one.
But I'm a sharer. I don't know about you guys, but you guys seem to be like, you know.
I didn't think you were a fan of sharing boards generally, though, Heath.
I'm not. I who wants sweaty meat and sweaty cheese with shit olives on an olive board and some really shit bread and then you're like for 20 odd quid? No, thank you. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I'm sure the flies in the beer garden probably like it, right?
Yeah, it's just a bit shit, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Like charcuterie. I don't mind charcuterie, but like...
Yeah, but is it going to be good or is it going
to
be...
Yeah, we're trying to sell like we're continental. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, look, we're so European, even though we left the EU. Yay.
Win, win. Have a good day.
We have got another good day, haven't we? I mean, what about barbecues? Pub garden barbecues. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, man, like, let's be honest, you Brits can't cook a barbecue. It's embarrassing. Like, so many times. You know, like, there's a little bit of tricks you can do with stuff, you know, like cooking sausages from scratch on the barbie stuff, you know what I mean? Like, you're just going to burn them. They never get a temperature right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I mean, yeah, it helps with covers. You know, we used to use roll out our spit roast pick machine all the time, but I just got a bit lazy. It's a lot of work. But, yeah, barbecues are good if you've got a big beer garden. Do you know what I mean?
I guess it does come down to space, doesn't it? You guys don't really have the space.
No, and it's going to be sitting there taking space for the rest of the year. You know what I mean? So if you've got a big barbecue there, you can have a table there for people rather than... You know,
you can get barbecues on wheels, James. You don't have to have it there all the time.
Still going to go somewhere. We haven't got any room.
You honestly suggest you could do a commercial barbecue operation with a little barbecue on wheels?
People do, no, but you've got like Jose Pizarro at his pub. He uses the big green eggs, which are, you know, the Rolls Royce to barbecues. So if you've got that action, you just need chefs who know what they're doing.
But then
that's a problem in the industry.
You do see, I've seen there's a couple of places near here that do, like they have a shack outside, and then some of them will just be banging out.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Youngs do that with their barbecue shack, don't they? The problem I've got is when you're running, like here at the Red, when you're running, say we've got that car park that we used to turn into, like get host people to come and do like pop-ups, but you'd always have somebody in the party who wants the food from our kitchen, but they want it at the same time because they all want to eat together. Yeah, game. You know, I mean, it's Highgate for you, but it just becomes incredibly stressful.
I mean, I do take issue about your comment about us not being able to cook on a barbecue, because I think you'll find I can do a really mean pizza on my barbecue.
I've only seen photos of your pizza. Photos are enough. My eyes bleed looking at it.
I had a barbecue at Ed's, and I have to say the sausages, the only thing that would save them is a time machine.
It's a little bit harsh. It's a little bit harsh.
I just died inside slightly. I've seen you Brits get like fire lighter liquid and pour it all over your coals and then set it on fire. Like, man, who taught you guys
what's wrong with
that? It's just or you have these really shit gas barbecues.
Oh, I'm not a fan I'm 100% no gas barbecue. That's not barbecuing, that's outdoor cooking.
I just think it makes me laugh. I always get scared. Remember the first time I had a barbecue with an English person in this country, I thought it was a joke. I thought I was on some sort of comedy television show. It's embarrassing.
You're not a fan of the lighter fluid warmth effects, then, though?
Bit of theatre, isn't it?
I always thought so, yeah. See how high you can get the flames up. They've just set fire to the sausages on top, no?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's got salmonella written all over it. Bit of food poison from Ed.
Let's not go there. All right, let's park that one there for now. You're listening to the Lock In podcast, and we are at the end of this episode, and we've been talking about pub gardens. I think, we've learned quite a lot about them. We've heard the legal side, we've heard what makes a good pub garden, and also some cautionary tales of what not to do or potential pitfalls. But I mean, generally speaking, I mean, how important is a pub garden to you two? I mean, Do you consider it, if you were going to take on another pub, would it be something that you had to have?
100%, yes. Mm-hmm. Not only have we got people still worried about COVID, global warming, it's just going to get hotter.
Like, I mean, there's always a positive. Like, there's always a positive for that.
And the sea's arising, so you can sit out there and just have a little paddle. I think it's a massive consideration now, isn't it, Heath? Just in terms of...
Yeah, you need it, man. I think you do. Like, you know, I know all the operators have got just pubs that are inside cry come summer.
Yeah.
Because they lose so much business. You know what I mean? Like, I think you need it. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's interesting how important pub gardens have become, haven't they? Because, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was... You went to... It was a place for families, you know, pub garden was for families, but now it's just so much more, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you can get away with a bit more as well if the garden's lovely. You know, you'll go there because it's just, and the kids can run around and all the rest of it, you know. But I think now you have to have this consideration. Then you've got to think about, you know, how you service it. Have you got the right staff? Can you manage your kitchen? But I think certainly more important than ever. And I don't think the COVID thing is going away in terms of people's behaviour. I think it's when the weather's right, still people have comfort in space.
And it's become a much more, I mean, like you say, summer months, yeah, obviously, you know, people flock to the pubs with the best gardens and the rest of it, but COVID's sort of shown us, you know, we can trade these spaces year round, so it's not just about summer, is it?
It's interesting because your boundary always used to be the place where, or you're outside where people would smoke. Right.
Yeah.
And now you've got that extended. You're always pushing them a bit further away.
I was going to say they're almost out on the
I mean,
it's a
thing, right? You know, you are having to segregate again because.
Well, at the Red Lion, there's no smoking in the front garden, even though the back garden's not covered. There's no smoking out there.
No.
You've literally got to walk out into the car park to have a cigarette.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because, but it's just the style of operation because it's so many families and so many people. You know, and the last thing you need is someone puffing away in a Marlboro where you're trying to have your dinner. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly,
so, and it's there's been no backlash against it really. People just go, "We don't have to smoke." Do you know what I mean? It's you know.
I think people understand. There's certainly a sort of gentrification of the garden. I think operators looking at it more than ever as well, investing in them.
Yeah.
But it's a constant. I think one thing I'd say is it's a constant thing. We've just replanted out the front here, put some new lights out. It doesn't just. It's not a box you just tick and forget about. It's
you've got to do it properly.
It's becoming. I mean, I remember with sort of previous public of the walls judging, going seeing some of the finalists, and certainly the big pub co's were really starting to put a lot more emphasis on curb appeal and outside space. Lots of investment going into external refurbishments, and I think some of the finalists in this year's competition as well. There's some really sort of, I think Punch did a really good job with its inside outside refurbishment work that they've been doing, and everyone's looking at this now. So it's become so much more crucial, hasn't it?
Yeah. Well, Admiral certainly did a good job in the last few years selling outside areas into car parks, into buildings.
And that was Hawthorne.
Was it? Was it? Are you sure?
That was Hawthorne. Yeah.
Okay. I think Admiral too. But
well, now owned by Admiral. But
of course. Sorry. Yeah.
But this is it. I mean, yeah. That was a trend, wasn't it? Selling off the car parks to C-store to create sort of other retail opportunities for the rest of it. Whereas now, do you think that's gone? Do you think people are going to be clawing back that space?
I think the value's seen as part of the operation now. Yeah, I really do.
Well, I think let's leave that one there for this week. That is all from us at the end of this episode of The Lock-In. Obviously, we'd like to wish good luck to all our finalists at the Publican Awards, which is taking place on Wednesday, probably the same day this is going out, so good luck with that. And if you listen to after that, well done to the winners, but I'm not going to tell you who that is right now. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we will be taking a look at cocktails, may even drinking a few as well, responsibly, of course. I'm looking at you, Heath. Some frozen margaritas perhaps are going to be on the cards on that one. So that is us. Thanks for listening. Tune in, share, like, comment, send us your thoughts. Till then, stay safe. We'll see you next time.